right around Australia, you're with Zan Rowe on Double J. There's a Scottish man who's fronting an American band. Now he lives in Dublin, though. I'm in Rosedale looking for ghosts.
Tim Rogers and Davey Lang, good morning.
Good morning, Zan.
What a pleasure to see you both again.
Yeah, I'm glad we put on our makeup this early.
You look fantastic.
You know, once if you're the devil and the star child, you got to put on that makeup as soon as you wake up. Here we are.
Thank you for letting us feature this record before it comes out tomorrow as well. I mean, Friday.
You can feature whatever you want.
Absolutely.
We're very glad for the attention and thank you very much.
It's a feather in the cap to have a couple of songs played
pre-release.
Post.
More than a couple as well. Like, we've been just playing the shit out of them all week. And that song we've been playing for a few months now, The Water Boy, a song about the feeling of being lifted up by a song of that kind of feeling of music carrying you along. And I guess whether you can keep finding that feeling. When and where did you write The Water Boy?
I wrote it in a smaller town just out of Rosedale, New South Wales, on the south coast. Rosedale's where my best mate Nick Tischler and I started the band. That's where we had the first conversation in 1989 about I was going to leave university, get medicated, and let's start a band. Those three things should always run confluently. And I was there about 3 years ago drinking beer and fishing with Nick, and his father was very ill, and just driving around, and I thought it was time to check in again with the Water Boys. So I hadn't bought their last couple of records, and I got their record Modern Blues, and I'd always loved Mike Scott as a prose writer and as a singer, as a songwriter. And there was a track on there called I Can See Elvis, and it's not the greatest song on the album, it's not the greatest song he's written, but I couldn't stop listening to it as I was just cycling around this small fishing community and looking at the lives of others, and wrote this song. And I thought that four places motif about either the parts of the heart or four places are referenced internationally throughout the song. I thought, ooh, that's a bit smart. And so I wrote it in this $50 a night hotel room, drinking just Milton Mangoes and catching flathead all day as a folk song. And then about a year and a half later, I wanted to write a song for my band. So I changed it and kept all the lyrics, but wrote it as a rock song.
What did you think when you first heard it, Davey?
Well, the Water Boy was one of the ones that was pretty immediately, I think halfway through the first verse, I knew that it was going to be a classic UMI song.
Mm.
Yeah, and as Tim was saying, the interwoven thing with the four places and the four parts that make up a heart, and it was just this melange of brilliantness that it was like the first time I heard it, it was immediate. And
then when we got the demo back from Russ,
well, the funniest to talk about the demo, because what you hear on the record of Tim's guitar and voice is the first time that he ever played it to me at my place. Yeah, that was the
was
demo.
That your, was that your place?
Yeah,
I thought it was that institution.
Oh, is that what it was? Right, that's what happened last year. Right.
Yeah.
It's all coming back to you.
Then Dave and I sent it to Rusty and said, oh, what do you think of this? And in my memory, and don't let the truth get in the way of a good story, was that 2 days later, Russ sent back a demo of him playing at home over the demo that we sent him. And you and I just fell about laughing, masked laughing, because we thought, oh, everything's happening again. And Rusty's starting to play with his spirit, which has always been there, but
yeah,
initially at times on songs, Russ he'll open with this comment, I'm going to play it pretty straight, and Dave and I go, and Andy goes, come on, man, try and grab that tiger by the tail,
throw that fridge down the staircase,
and so he sent back his demo, and it was all and really exciting, and we thought, right, we're off,
and I don't think there was any line drawn in the sand where we, when we went into it, we were initially like, we're just going to throw some ideas around and see what happens. I don't think there was any point where, okay, we're making a record now. It was just kind of Russ threw things back and Andy threw ideas back, and so we were kind of, before we knew it, we were three quarters of the way through, and so we're making a record.
See, sometimes when we make records, we are three quarters of the way through it before we realise, because we have first nights of recording parties. We thought, given the circumstances...
You just get a bit excited.
We get very excited. We always, I mean, our last record, Porridge and Hot Sauce, we got to Brooklyn, Daptone Studios, and Dave and I just walked in with a crate of beer, and the engineer said, everything okay? And we went, yeah, it's 11 o'clock in the morning. You know, we're making a record. And he said, yeah, I always see beer as kind of an end of work thing. And we went, oh, we don't.
Yeah.
Let's go. And you know, we like to have fun and get into the spirit of it. And so we're three quarters of the way through the record and you go, ooh.
Days 2, 3, and 4 of recording sessions are always cowering in the corner, shaking. It's a lesson that we'll probably
never learn.
Well, this is a very different record as well, because you're kind of referring to sending it to Andy and Rusty. They're on the other side of the border. They're in New South Wales. You and you know, Tim and Dave, you're in Victoria. Is this all going on when the borders are closed, when the pandemic's in full flight?
Yeah.
And is that how the album continued, that you continued to make it remotely?
Yeah. We were never in the room together, the four of us.
Have you ever done that before with a UMI record?
No. Not from memory, but I made a record last year, early last year, where I was doing a lot of like collaborating with people overseas and that kind of thing. So I was kind of in the rhythm of kind of having that stuff, that remote kind of way of working, worked out.
That's a good point. I'd sort of forgotten about that. Definitely not about the record, but the way that you were set up for that. So I'd go around, walk around to Davies and say, oh, how are we going to do this? And Davey would, scratch your head for about 15 seconds, pretending that you don't know immediately what you need to do, and then you do it. But you have that lovely sensibility of, well, I can't let you know I'm a genius for 15 seconds.
No.
Very grounded.
I think it's a way that we've always been. The chemistry of the band is such that we've never tried that mode of recording before. But, you know, when necessity is the mother of invention, you kind of we rolled with it, and we're not, you know, we're kind of Luddites to a point, but we know how to work our way around this thing called the internet that we transfer things with.
The energy is very much there on this record. It sounds brilliant. The UMI record is what we're talking about. It comes out on Friday, all this week. We've been hearing songs from it first before anybody else. It's called The Lives of Others. Tim Rogers and Davey Lane are joining us here on a Wednesday morning to walk you through some of the making of this record. Let's hear another song from it. This is one of yours, Davey.
Oh.
I'm My Whole World Tonight. Oh, one of two songs that you sing on this record. It's quite glorious.
Oh, thank you.
Can you tell me a little bit about its writing?
With this one in particular, I kind of, I think we pride ourselves on having made a record in 2020 with zero references to anything that
went on
obviously
in 2020.
Happened in 2020. But this song was kind of born of being, I was kind of staring out the window sometime after 8 p.m. curfew and wondering, well, you know, I can't go outside, but if one has a fertile imagination, one can imagine be anywhere they want to be. So that's kind of the...
Fertile imagination and some psychotropic drugs.
It's very hopeful, though, isn't it? It's very hopeful, just, you know, when all you've gotten is the world in front of you, in your mind.
It's a nice thing to realise from time to time.
I'm trying to take the more naive and sweet view of it, Tim. You just went straight for the drug references. Classic Rogers.
Unless they built me, then.
We talked a little bit about that whole lockdown thing for people in Melbourne, the 8 p.m. curfew, all that strangeness, but all across the world and, you know, all across Australia, obviously, isolation was such a huge part of 2020. Did that do anything for your songwriting, for better or for worse? How did it make you think about writing and the pause of the world around you?
I was more concerned. Well, I had family who died and a number of people who got it. So apart from the panic of that, As far as writing goes, I know there are a lot of people complaining about, I want to play a gig. I personally couldn't give a fuck if we played another gig again. I just wanted people to get healthy and well. And then later on, once that anxiety and not knowing subsided, as Davey mentioned before, for people working in, because I work in hospitality as well, and I lost that job. And then other people working around music, as writers, we can, as Davey intimated before, if we've got a Spirex notepad and a pen in front of us, we can go anywhere. There's the whole fecund universe at the end of your pen or with your instrument. And so we could do that. And I really started to feel a lot more for people who didn't have that at the end of their fingertips, you know, because I guess if you could see a lot of people just delving into wanting to make contact with other people through social media, of course, and a lot of wonderful stories about how that was employed. But pen and paper, pencil and paper, you know, blank books or the ability to read, whatever form that took. So I felt quite fortunate and very glad that personally I had that at my extremities, you know. Mm. And so Dave and I would talk about that. At least we can write. And it doesn't matter if it gets out there. Creativity without a response is still a wonderful thing to experience.
It doesn't just happen with an end result in mind. The act of creativity is a gift in and of itself, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, that's very well put. And really felt that last year, apart from just feeling very grateful because I didn't know if the band was going to play again or record again. I sort of had it in my own mind that I doubted that I'd be involved. And then within that echo chamber and writing and that being a gift unto itself, I thought, I'm starting to feel very grateful for the relationship that we have musically and personally, and I couldn't wait to get back together and do something together. But that could have just been a night of drinking.
I think gratitude was a huge feeling for me and for many others last year. This, from what I've read around this record too, this album sounds like it came at a real crossroads for you. It sounds as though you literally were like, maybe this is it. Maybe there's no more UMI.
Yeah. I thought our friendship was more important, and I was... I think now just very depressed or a little bit depressed and not being the best friend. And I thought, well, let's stay friends and I'll just eke out. So rather than do anything major, I just didn't tell anyone, went and got a couple of jobs and thought, well, maybe that'll straighten it out. And kind of did put things, you know, in a bit of, you know, perspective. And I didn't need to pretend to be having the best time until... a point like now where I am actually having the best time, and it's honest. It's not just putting it all on. Any kind of flamboyancy is from enthusiasm and joy rather than feeling as if you're acting a part, which I think I kind of was for the past the last 2 years that the band were touring around.
We had a pretty stretch of pretty arduous touring as well towards the end of that last year, 2019 as well, so I think it's like across the board, it was like, yeah, kind of burnt us all out a little bit. But
from your perspective, have you seen that reset as well, Davey? And for yourself, both feeling it within the band, does it feel like a new beginning?
I think just having that space and not having any pressure with time constraints or deadlines or anything like that. I just think us being able to amble into it at our own pace really for the record's benefit, I reckon.
And now we want deadlines. After a while not having them, you don't mind them now. When someone says you need to bicycle to Tullamarine and then learn how to fly a plane on that bicycle and can you fly us all the Whyalla, we'd go, no wuckers.
You're having some different conversations still, right? I'm having in my daily schedule, that's for sure.
No one's asked you to do that?
Not this week.
We demand more of each other's end.
But like, yeah, I know what you mean. Like doing something to a brief or to a, so I can do that. I would do that now. But like, not that we're not procrastinators, but we you know, we've always got stuff on the boil. So
yeah,
to have that kind of, you know, the parameters of a deadline. But it, you know, it meant that we could hone our parts and I think it's all for the better.
Well, you obviously did. I mean, now that you told me that it was first take on nearly everything, I don't know if I really put enough care into it, David. just write the shit, you know. That,
you're very good at what you do. Tim Rogers and Davey Lane.
One take Timmy. Double take Davey.
We're talking The Lives of Others, the brand new UMI record, which comes out on Friday. It's their first in about 6 years, the 11th studio album from these living bloody legends. A lot of people are talking about how this reminds them of early records. How do you feel about that, that point back to the past? I know that you don't have the greatest relationship with that idea of nostalgia, Tim. How do you feel about those references to those first four records?
If that makes people happy, then absolutely welcome to it. And that's not snide. I like seeing people happy. There's one song that we changed the name of because it reminded me so much of a period in the band's history. I don't mind looking back. We had some really, really good times, but I just don't think you can feed off that too much because we are, you know, living quite full lives now. And I keep saying, if you think it's fun being in a band when you're 21, when you're 51, it's flipping hilarious. It's not entirely just chutzpah.
Yeah.
It's, you can, I'm not exactly sure. But I really don't mind looking back. But I think just after a long period, when you get told that your best time's behind you, and this is for in any walk of life, I guess for someone, if they're good looking and told that they've lost their looks, or if someone been told that they don't root as good as they used to as a kid, or if their painting's not as good, or their needlework's not as good. No, I mean, no one likes being told that. And so I guess my reluctance to really dwell on the past is just, you can't expect us to be great with that because we're writing and recording. And it may be true that those records are vastly more important for people aside from ourselves. And that's really wonderful. And we're so thankful for that. But, you know, we are writing better songs now. It's just that they're not hitting people at the time when they were 18, 15, 21, which are more important times to them. You know, they weren't as important to us.
Mm.
And that's all. You know, I don't mind looking back. I had cheekbones when I was 22, but
you could still,
I've got better ones now.
Exactly. I was going to say, you could
cut a bloody
slice of cheddar on
Emmental.
Those.
You're both beautiful. It's wonderful to have you both in the studio. This record is fantastic. That's why we're featuring you here on Double J, The Lives of Others. It's a title that I've only ever heard once before, a film about the Stasi in the GDR. Where did you lift it from? Is it about observing others in a creepy way?
No.
Creepy governmental way?
I do have German family as well who don't want to talk about times in history. But that film made a significant impact on me. But the Lives of Others was, that title is the only thing that refers to last year. And it's because on our hourly walks where we were able to go outside, looking at people and the lives of others going on through glass. And it ran concurrent with a photo exhibition that I lucked onto by a photographer, Lisa Sorgini, whose photography graces the album cover. Now, I was at home and Lisa Sorgini, I went to a school, one of the 20 I went to, with a lady named Lisa Sorgini, and I saw this image come up, and it was of motherhood, mothers and their children being taken from the other side of glass, from the other side of a window in a house. And the melancholy of it, the beauty of it, really got to me. And as I go on these walks, and I kept thinking about these photographs of Lisa Sorgini's, who she lives in New South Wales now, and watching the lives of others from the safety of bitumen, watching the lives of others from the comfort of bitumen, the lives of others are the lives I'm living in. And it felt... walking around alone, that for 30 years writing these songs have been about the lives of others. And so this title just stuck in there. That it's the same name as a brilliant film, and I urge anyone who's not seen it to see it. It's remarkable. And I know, Davey, I know you're a history buff, and you've been to the Stasi Museum.
Mm.
That's the confluence rather than the inspiration. Mm. Brilliant film. It's a lot about Lisa Sorgini's photography, Sorgini. And we're lucky enough that she sold us the photographs for the cover.
That beautiful cover art you'll be able to see everywhere when the album comes out on Friday. You're hearing the record all this week first on Double J as we feature the new album from UMI. Let's play one more song to go out with as well. Another one of my favourites. It's called Rubbish Day. There's a lot going on here. There's some really complex melodies. There's some pretty spacey guitar work. Is there an dare I say, an Eastern flair going on as well with the sound of this?
Yeah, possibly.
Is there some tabla?
Well, we kind of joke that it's our most prog moment to date.
This is a real tea party moment for you, isn't it?
How dare you?
I did that for you, Tim.
Thank you very much. You know, Dave and I...
This is your Splendor Soulless moment. You just look so disappointed in me
No, I don't. No, look, Jeff, they're fine, fine people. They're a fine, fine band. It's just, Penny's just yet to drop for me yet. They're fine, fine people.
Very democratic.
You know, Dave and I did the basic track for this, and we wrote to Russ saying, we think we know how the drums should go. And this is the beauty of being in a band. If you're in a band, you listen to your bandmates. You don't dictate to them. But we said to Russ, here's what we think. And we didn't hear from him for a week. Because you don't tell Russell Hopkinson what to play. Or he'll listen to you. He listens to us because we're all, you know, we love each other. Similar to if you tell Andy something, he'll nod and then he won't. He'll go a completely different way. But what Russ came up with is flipping genius. All the percussion on it is his, the drum patterns, everything. That's why you should leave these things to Russell Hopkinson, why you should leave it to Andy Kent. And then my mate over there pulls off. You did take drugs last year. I know.
Rusty's part kind of informed my direction. And I don't know, I was thinking of guitar players like Steve Howe from Yes and, you know, maybe like late 60s Jeff Beck and stuff like that. But it, yeah.
But that's because you
take it on
to
a prog jog.
A prog jog. But you listen, because we got that from Russ, didn't we? Because the song
Absolutely.
Was very different until we gave it to him. He came back. We listened to our bandmate, and it's an infinitely better song.
This is the sum of the parts of You and I. It's beautiful. I love it. It's a prog jog. Let's hit the streets. Go for a run.
Yeah, but you don't wear shorts on a prog jog.
I don't want. It's too visual and far too visceral for this time
hat,
in the morning.
You wear a wizard's hat. And there's a cloud of smoke behind you.
Yeah.
Some loon pants and possibly a sandal. That's what you jog on your prog jog.
And with that, imagine all of it as I press play. Tim and Davey, thank you for joining us today on Double J.
We love
thank you, Zan.
Zan.
Why must it always be a rubbish day when my nighttime companion spin curvoisy, hey, as if to release me from the shackles of my sins with the shouting of the codes, the rattling of the bins. Why must my equilibrium be challenged so when I'm...
New music with Zan on Double J.